Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Hola, bitches. Welcome to another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Tonight, we're going to be taking a look at a low-rent, cheap knockoff of The Burning called Honeymoon Horror. The trailer's right over there. We'll be over there. Why don't you check it out and join us in a second, hmm?
We should have plenty of business this season.
Oh, yes. Young lovers coming out to Lover's Island.
This place fair gives me the willies. I'll be glad to get home tonight. It's a perfect spot for honeymoon. No interruptions. No TV, no telephone. Nothing but this beautiful peace and quiet.
Crazy kids.
I hope they don't run into Joe. He'll scare them to death. Quiet, too isolated. Suppose something happened.
Like what?
You are jumpy. What's the matter?
It's kind of spooky.
Look, there's nothing spooky about it.
There is. Away from everything like this, it's weird. You don't know the half of it.
Goodbye, girls.
That means there's somebody else in the island been killing all the women.
And thus, we just saw Honeymoon Horror and the trailer therein, which is essentially a Friday the 13th-ish sort of movie.
Kind of The Burning Part 2. It's got pretty much the same premise to it.
Pretty much, yeah. It's you start off on a island, which is this actually a honeymoon camp for a lover's getaway, a lover's paradise. And you have Elaine and her husband Frank and the other resident of the island, Vic. Mm-hmm. And so here it is late one night, and Frank is like, hey, honey, I'm going to go sit in the rowboat for a little while. I'll see you later. And so he goes down to the rowboat and starts getting off the island. And Elaine, she's all like, coochie, coochie, coo time, and goes over to fuck Vic.
Then, for some reason, Frank says, oh, I forgot my smokes. So he goes back to the cabin, sees she's not there, and he snaps. He's like, oh, I get it. So he knows what's going on. You know, yeah, Vic is dipping his wick. And so he goes in, catches them in flagrant delicti, and
technically just about to be. They weren't actually in the act.
They were still dressed.
True enough, they were about to do it. They were kissing, had their shirts and blouses off and shit.
But clearly this was only stage one of a home run here. Ooh, so yeah. Frank, he loses his shit and starts attacking Vic. And Elaine, she comes along and gently taps Frank on the head with the most sugar glass bottle you've ever seen in your life. Mm-hmm. That thing just pee, like...
You blow on it and it shatters.
He tumbles off of across the bed and onto the floor and knocks something down, and it sets a fire. And Vic says...
Oil lamp.
As Vic says, oh my God, we gotta get him. And Elaine is like, ah, screw him. And he's like, oh shit. So they take off, and then the cabin burns down.
And then we cut to 1 year later, where they reopened the honeymoon camp and they've got a whole bunch of these just out of college, I guess, newlyweds, like three couples, so six people. And they're going to come out to the island and spend their honeymoon because that's what you do, apparently. Mm-hmm. And the opening bit before the honeymooners get to the island, because you have a bunch of sorority sisters, they say, hey, let's go and celebrate these guys' newlywedism by decorating their cabins with, like,
skeletons,
a paper skeleton.
And stuff, like, to scare them, you know, and kind of put the wind up their skirts, as it were.
And then that's when, well, okay, it turns out that Frank's not actually dead. So Frank, being not dead, and he looks kind of like this crispy critter sort of dude.
It's kind of like he was a man made out of a candle, and they lit the wick for like a minute, and then they blew the wick out, and he kind of got a little bit softened.
He goes and kills the sorority sisters. There's like this one girl, she's hanging out in the boat, and she kind of falls asleep, and night falls, and he dismembers with her an axe. There's, she stuffs like the person with the really shitty Cockney accent in a closet. Then the newlyweds show up.
You've got Sue and her husband, you've got Linda and her husband, and then you've got Kay and her husband, and Kay's husband looks kind of like a cross between Borat and Freddie Mercury.
And so from that point, the movie just kind of goes through their typical honeymoon night. They have dinner, they go out for a walk, they start having intercourse, because apparently I guess that's a thing on your wedding night.
One of the more interesting scenes is between Linda and her husband, who's this big bodybuilding jock. I mean, when they pull in, everybody gets out of the boat. He pulls it on shore. He's got a bag full of dumbbells, and he forgets to carry her across the threshold. So Linda has a minor meltdown, and her husband's saying, "Hey, Linda, shut up!" Picks her up. Fireman carries her in there, you know, and you know you're going to go at it later.
Fun fact about the movie is that the director was apparently openly gay. And so when we talk in these movies about the female gaze and how the camera lingers on the ass, this movie, if you're looking for it, has a strong stripe of the homosexual gaze. Because you have sweaty barbell lifting jocks with their shirts off, and the camera lingers on them very lovingly. So if you're looking for it and you know that, oh my God, the guy was gay, it totally is a gay movie.
What's funny is in one of the earlier scenes when the co-eds are getting prepped to go out to the island, one of the brunette, stops at the corner store and gets some supplies, and she's talking to the sheriff and the deputy. And there's one moment where she's leaning in the car and the camera focuses right on her butt. And the sheriff and the deputy are both like, ooh, you know, checking her out. But
that's a very small percentage of the movie. Most of it is the sweaty, oiled men gaze. And so you don't get a lot of what you get the female flesh on display like you would in a slasher flick in the 80s. It's an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the only time any one of them gets fully naked is Linda when she gets into the shower. And you know, before the quackity-wackity-whack her hack, I mean, Kay, who was the one who set up the whole excursion to begin with, she's the taller of the two blondes. She's kind of the Barbara Crampton kind of looking one. She has a sex scene, but it's all in the dark and you don't see much flesh. And then my favorite, oh, my angelic woman, Sue. Oh, she's, I
liked her a lot.
I've had
too.
An obsession about women named Susan and Barbara since the 70s because the ones I knew tended to be tall, curly, brunette haired women, and she fits this perfectly. She's entirely my type for women named Susan who are white. And holy shit, I mean, my God, they gave her a lion's share of stuff to do with the two leads. And I was thinking they were grooming her maybe for, you know,
being
further
the final
stuff.
Girl.
But, yeah, I thought maybe final girl until, oh, God damn it!
This movie bucks all sorts of conventions and tropes of the slasher genre because there is no final girl, because the ending is so fucking weird. All right, so the movie, the bulk of the running time of the movie is essentially them doing honeymoon things. And occasionally Frank shows up and, like, kills somebody. But even after they start realizing, wait a second, there's a madman on the island with us and we're trapped and we can't get off, they still just stand around and talk and talk and make coffee. Nobody's going to be admitted during the enthralling coffee making scene, which goes on for like 25 fucking minutes. And then at the end, everybody just kind of vanishes and falls off the map. And the sheriff shows up. Actually, we should talk about the sheriff first before we get into that.
Yes. Oh, my God. Oh, this sub Smokey and the Bandit kind of, you know.
Sheriff and his deputy are quite the pair.
Ugh.
The sheriff is basically, the director said, I liked Last House on the Left, and I really liked the sheriff. So I'm going to take that and dial it up to 11 and put it into my movie. Because there's this long scenes of him and his deputy just arguing about bullshit. And there's, like, he gets on the phone to one of the people calling in a complaint. Oh, and it's like, we can't look for him for another 24 hours because that's how this works. Or somebody calls him and says, hey, man, there's a fire on the island. The place is burning down. He's like, absolutely, we'll get right on it. And he gets right back to his fucking sandwich without lifting a finger. I hate this fucking
yes,
cop.
This motherfucker, if he'd been investigated by the FBI so or by the other police department, if he wasn't a county sheriff and he'd been investigated by, you know, some other department, they would have not only had fired him, they would have thrown him in jail for being obstructed, you know, basically doing nothing. He could have been saving lives, but no, he went and did nothing, and there were deaths involved. He should have gone to jail and fucking hung.
At the very end of the movie, after Frank has his revenge on Elaine and Vic because they're the ones that burned him, but for some reason he kills all the New Elites first. All right, whatever, man. And so Vic kills Frank. And then Frank, like, pulls out a knife and, like, throws it across the room and stabs Vic in the back and he falls over dead. And you think, okay, the movie's going to be over. Everything's done. Everybody's gone. Oh, no. We still have another 10 goddamn minutes of the sheriff getting out of the police station, getting into a boat, driving the boat across the water, getting to the island, going up some long stairs up to the house where he has to walk across the yard and into the house where he looks and says, oh, my God. And then we cut to him on the radio talking to base or central command or who the fuck knows. And meanwhile, the lady at the very beginning of the movie who was running a 7-Eleven or something like that is sitting in the cop car kind of like, what's going on? What's going on? Somebody, so the policeman has a info dump to info dump to. And so he just talks about, well, the body's missing. Oh, my God, what happened to Frank? I thought he was dead. No, he's missing. And then, wait a minute, Crazy Joe got out of where they locked him up and they took him to a cave. Show, don't tell. Show, fucking movie.
Some of the kills in here, oh my God, when they killed Sue, it was actually probably the best one in the entire movie because it was so savage. But the thing is, I think the director said, okay, you get hit in the chest with this axe, you're dead, fall over dead, and don't do anything. Just lie there and let them hack you to bits. It's like she didn't move, she didn't do anything. And it's just like, that's bad directing right there.
This movie absolutely needed to just embrace the crazy and go for it. Kind of a little bit like Don't Go in the Woods Alone, where, okay, so you've got the jock, and he's on his wedding night, and he's like, hey, baby, I'm going to go outside, and I'm going to lift some weights, because I got to lift some weights, because I'm Mr. America wannabe. And she's all like, go on, honey, okay, whatever. And so he goes outside alone in the dark in the woods, and you think, well, wait a second, here comes something good. He's going to get killed with his barbells because that's what you do. You present Chekhov's gun, and then you murder somebody with Chekhov's gun. Oh, no, he doesn't die.
I felt so bad for Linda when her husband went outside, you know, because, I mean, you know, they're trying to get intimate here. And here he goes, and he's going out to get fucking sweaty. And I guess if you're talking about the gay male gaze, that's probably why he was out there getting sweaty, because the director not only wanted to show him, you know, beefing up his muscles, but present him as man meat later on, because he's one of the alpha males. He's actually the prime alpha in this movie. He's a jock. He's big. He's bulky. He's got huge muscles. He's going to go out. He's going to... But he stays behind to protect the women in the shack when the other two run off, the other two husbands, and they don't find anything. So he basically is derelict in his duty when he gets up to leave. And when he goes out to exercise himself, I thought to myself, when he finds his wife, it's like, dude, you weren't there. You're a husband in the 70s or the early 80s. You're supposed to protect your wife, you know, when she feels nervous. Because everybody in this movie, all the newlyweds are going, this place is fucking creepy ass, man. I don't want any shit happening.
One thing I can say about the setting is I liked the concept. I liked the setting. I thought it was a good setting. Unfortunately, they didn't do any good establishment shots. They didn't do any search shots. They didn't show off the setting in any way, shape, or form that would have made it a little bit more interesting.
Well, a bit like the movie last week, this movie was all shot in the dark with natural lighting, so they didn't have any stage lights. There wasn't any lighting to see the setting during the bulk of the movie.
But they could have done some establishment shots during the day when they had plenty of natural light.
I'm wondering if you had a pristine print of this movie and you ran it in a movie theater, if it wasn't a muddy video print, if you'd be able to make out things better. Because I read reviews from some people and they said, I really love the dark scenes. So I'm wondering if people had seen like an old video cassette or something and maybe it was better.
Well,
I don't know.
Even the lighting in the day shots seemed off.
So while we're talking about the technical side of things, why don't we get a little bit into the music, the wonderful, wonderful soundtrack to this music.
It was this weird kind of country, kind of pop, kind. It was really hard to pin down a genre to this.
I'm thinking maybe kind of a folk rock sort of, kind of a almost Lynyrd Skynyrd southern twang to it.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of had a localized, I mean, they shot this in Texas, so maybe they used local bands. Maybe they used who you can find to shoot over a weekend.
Yeah, but even if they used local bands, they could have found ones that weren't crap.
Well, it's not so much that it was crap. It was more just bombastic and completely inappropriate. Like the triumphant trombones as they're getting off the boat when they first arrive at the island. It's this over-the-top bombastic music. Or the wacky cops have a wacky soundtrack. And you just, oh, hey, the end of the movie where he scares off the honeymooners that have arrived with his pistol. And all of a sudden it says,
well, part of my problem with the music is sometimes the tracks just end and there's dead space. There's no fade out, you know, no bringing up of the other soundtrack to kind of compensate for it. It just ends. And they do that a lot. It mm-hmm. just ends.
Well, director Harry Preston only made one movie, and it's pretty evident why. Because he's shit at it.
Yeah, this needed to be like something he did in college and then learn from it and then try to make another one, you know, kind of dig down and hone his craft. Apparently this was it.
If he'd worked at it, or if another director had come along and pointed out some of the things he was doing wrong, there's a lot of room for improvement for this one. The basic premise is good. A lot of the basic characters are, even if they're tropes, they're still good. But I mean, I enjoyed a lot of the people. The story moved along, but it needed a lot of help.
You can be basic. You can have nothing but tropes. You can have absolutely no money. We talked about, just briefly, how this movie would be better if it went for the Don't Go in the Woods Alone. Don't Go in the Woods Alone had a $20,000 budget. This had a $50,000 budget. This had twice as much movie and looked four times as shit. There's no excuse.
The kills could have been a lot better. I mean, at the very least, you could have gotten way more creative than just hatchet.
Yeah, and they were pretty basic kills. And I mean, for the most part, as we discussed, they don't really hit a lot of the time. And you can tell when Elaine gets hit in the head with a hatchet, when her head goes back, her wig is getting pulled back. I was like, what the fuck?
Oh my God, that was the worst prosthetic I have ever seen, because it is very clearly this axe attached to her scalp. It looks terrible.
And I guess that's one of the lovable mistakes in this movie. They talk about lovable Blade Runner mistakes from the old days when you could see shit that was out of pocket and they go, huh? And over time you get to love it because it's one of your favorite movies. And a lot of people like this movie. They say it's got lovable mistakes because they were putting in some effort, but it wasn't enough. But still, they were trying, but still it wasn't enough.
you can totally go the Ed Wood route, the Plan 9 from Outer Space route, where it's incompetent, but it's charming, and it clearly has heart. This movie has no heart. It has no charm. It's perfunctionary. It's very workmanlike.
The only time there was any real tension early on in this movie was when the co-eds were doing up the rooms and the killer's there, and I thought they were going for making it look like it was Vic. Because, I mean, the killer was dressed in the same kind of pants and shirt. You couldn't see his head. And the one co-ed in the bathroom, she walks in, looks at her reflection, gets nabbed. And that was really good. You know, they didn't really show anything. But then the one who's hanging up stuff in the room, she gets axed right off the bat. Or something bad. I can't remember how she got killed. But she got, you know, stabbed or hacked or something.
Well, I'll go back to my assessment of the first 15 minutes are really strong. And it's not necessarily a very tense scene, but it is kind of intriguing. You know, what's going on here? Who are these people? What's their interplay? What's the relationship between Vic and Elaine and Frank? What's going on here? I liked that setup.
And I wonder if the scenes were shot more or less in sequential order, or if they were like usual movies, they shot what they could. Maybe they needed to spice it up a little bit, so when they got the final co-ed who fell asleep in the boat and hacked her arm off, maybe that was their making up for not having much to go on, you know, earlier on, so they needed something a bit more explicit, because that is nasty as fuck. It's moist and ready, you know? So I thought, yeah, this is good.
There actually was a bit of a tension buildup with the co-ed in the boat, because, you know, she's just kind of hanging out, and she kept looking up towards the main body of the island, at the buildings, and then she just kind of falls asleep, and you're like, okay, what's going to happen? Is she going to wake up and go back into the cabin to see what's keeping her friend so long? Or is she just going to saw wood for a while?
And of course, by that time, the other two co-eds are dead, and presumably the maid slash cook, because she just disappeared off the face of the map until about 40 minutes into the film. And so naturally, it made sense to wait until dark for the stalker to come out and kill her, because she was liable to scream bloody murder out there. And so hacking her to bits at night made more sense, because it makes it scary and everything. And then they fall off, as we say, the face of the map. And the sheriff says, well, they're missing. We'll go and look for them in 24 hours. It's like, what happened to the co-eds? Yeah, we know what happened to them. They're dead.
So, shall we just wrap this thing up, or do you have any final thoughts? Shall we just put the thing to bed?
Well, I was thinking, okay, so this movie is a combination of so many films, and it seems like it took liberties with The Burning, Friday the 13th.
There's a Psycho reference.
Psycho, various movie tropes and everything, and it made a ton of money. They spent $50,000 on this. It made $22 million after it got bought by Sony. Or whatever.
That just baffles me how they were releasing this on videotape well into the 90s. This thing is a popular movie, or at least it was, you know, 25 years ago.
Well, yeah, this is a movie that gives you what you want right away, but then it kind of fizzles out. But this is a case of, you don't know, since we didn't have the internet back in those days, really had BBS ports, people were saying, oh, you got to see this movie. You go and rent it, and it's great, and then you settle into soap opera. Well, sucker. You know, maybe not necessarily meant to sucker people in, but they start off really strong and then they kind of bottom out, but you've already paid your $1.50 to see it.
I think at the end of the day, you can find this movie pretty easy online. It's all over YouTube and whatnot. Go watch it for the hour and a half, fast forward past the fat cop. It's not a complete waste of time, but yeah, don't really burn up too much time trying to find this. So how in the fuck did this wind up on the list? Because all the murders are pretty much off screen. You only see the aftermath.
Yeah, and the strikes, I mean, they don't even show those. I mean, they show a little bit of afterward and some blood thrown like off screen by somebody holding a bottle or some shit.
Or it's somebody grabbing a body and yanking it off frame around a corner or something like that.
Was there a chopped off limb in this? Because I watched a couple of horror movies in a row that last night.
The brunette that fell asleep in the boat.
Right, right.
She had her arm cut off. Although they didn't actually show that. They just showed severed arm.
So there was a lot of red in this movie, and there was a lot of screaming in this movie, but there's no gore to it at all. What say you?
There was enough blood that I think that if you were looking at it just on blood splatter, I could see somebody being upset about that. However, there's absolutely nothing else in this movie that is even theoretically objectionable.
I think what happened was that the censor board was watching this movie. They watched the first 5 or so minutes of it. They saw the guy get thrown into the fireplace, although you don't actually see it. And you get to see all the murders and like the dead chick in the closet, although you don't get to see her murder. And they said, all right, that's enough for me. And they turned it off right then and there and called it a night.
And plus anything with the word horror in it, you know, it's just like, oh, we're just going to lump this shit together. My hell, I'm surprised Rocky Horror didn't get put on the list someplace.
So would you seize it?
Oh, fuck no.
Would you seize it?
No.
All right. I'm not seizing it. It's acquitted. You may now keep the tape. Tra-la-la. So, Honeymoon Horror. Was it a happy honeymoon or are you getting a divorce?
We're still dating at this point, but I think it was okay. I mean, I liked it. I didn't dislike it and I don't love it, but... yeah, I could see seeing that again.
It's one of those relationships where, you know, you got to give it a little bit of a chance to warm up, but I kind of enjoyed it.
On paper, this is a really strong concept. A isolated location with a whole bunch of colorful characters and like some mysterious goings on. On paper, that's a pretty good premise. The execution, however, falls completely flat. So no, it's not a fuck this movie, but I did not like it and I do not recommend it at all.
That sounds fine to me.
Fair enough.
All right. So we'll call it a day. You liked it. I not so much. So venture at your own risk and we'll catch you later.
At our refreshment stand, your wish is our command. So the coffee we serve there is pure perfection.
Well, the honeymoon may be over, but that's okay because the madness continues, because next week we're going to be taking a look at The House by the Lake, which totally sounds like a Last House on the Left ripoff, but it's not really. Okay, I lie. It's totally a Last House on the Left ripoff, but it's got Brenda Vaccaro in it, so it can't be all that bad. So join us next week, drop us an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and we'll catch you later. Until that time, stay evil.
You are such a bitch, Elaine.